Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey people, this is DJ.
And this is Ish.
And this is season four of Better Let Me Tell You.
Vaccinated too early.
We did.
Have you seen all the free shit they're giving?
I know. At Gramps, you can go and get pizza and a cocktail.
Okay.
And there was somewhere else that they were giving
some. I was like, can we get quadruple vaccinated?
Yeah, like, I'll just get really safe. Like, really vaccinated.
Well, with that note, welcome everybody to Pero Let Me Tell You.
Yes, episode 159.
How is everybody?
I think everybody's good. This is the first, we've just coming out of our first long weekend after,
yes,
after quarantine.
Officially summer.
Officially summer, and people are officially out.
Although, well, out because it's summer and it's June and it's
because
bright.
Things are open.
Oh, well, yes. Yes.
Because things are open. Yes. You
things
know,
are
so,
open.
So,
things are open.
Yeah, I mean, like, I went to the beach. I went to a bar. I was
I went to, I ended up going to Orlando, and I feel that all of humanity decided to go to Orlando at one time. And couldn't find a restaurant, ended up eating at a Wawa, as one does.
As one does. As
at 12:30 at night, because all the restaurants were either full, closed, or at full capacity.
And for the record, it was prepackaged Wawa. It wasn't even
It wasn't even the fresh deli at Wawa, because that had an hour wait at 12:30 at night, everyone. So welcome, everybody. How was everybody's week?
My week has been very good.
I know. I feel like this week, you and I did not have usually the contact we usually have.
You know what I think it is also? That, like, for the last couple of weeks, because between the show, the interviews, the pimpampoyo, like, all of it, like, we were in constant contact of, like, did you buy the thing? Yes, but did you get this? And did you get that? Right, but No, but, like, there was a lot going on, and we saw each other for, like, 4 days in a row.
Well, also, but, you know,
so now that we didn't, it feels like a month.
So all of our friends, we're all in a group chat, but in all honesty, I'm the one who's, like, the least involved in the
group. It's true. The other day, you literally sent a text that just said, hello, ... and did not follow it up.
I was going to follow it up with something else, but then I got busy. But anyway.
I even gave you like 10 minutes.
Enough about that. But yeah, now they're like giving all these incentives, Mira.
Yes.
In West Virginia, they'll give you a gun.
Oh, let's go. I want a gun.
They'll give you a rifle. In other parts, they're giving tractors.
Oh.
Yes.
How much surplus is there in these states?
They're giving tractors. They're giving lottery tickets. They're giving gift certificates at supermarkets, at restaurants.
Can we just use some of this tractor money to help with the production problem of chicken wings?
Mira, if they were to tell me, si ahorita Publix comes out giving gift certificates at Publix, because most of my disposable income goes to Publix already.
That's true.
So it's like we were trying to do the civic duty.
The right thing to do as soon as we were allowed. Yes,
you know, we're gonna do the line. We're gonna get vaccinated. Y ahora
pa qué total.
All these people getting all this freaking free shit.
You know what? Eso para that's what we learn.
But actually,
la próxima vez, I wait till everybody else is
actually,
done.
But actually, the other day I was watching it on TV. There was a conversation about this. And
CBS Sunday Morning?
No, it was on The View. But
I had a 50-50 shot.
I know. But it's just, I now it's become a thing when I reference CBS Sunday Morning and The View. So I don't want to be like on CBS Sunday. If it would have been a few years ago, it would have been NPR. Because at one point in time, I remember when
you were all about NPR.
Every other thing I said was like, I heard on NPR. On NPR today, Diane Rehm on NPR. Anyway, but I think this whole this whole thing about the vaccines is because while I certainly don't see why if you're eligible. You know, if you're eligible to get vaccinated, you shouldn't. I can understand somebody who, for whatever principle, does not want to get vaccinated.
Right.
Okay, you don't want to get vaccinated, and you have your reasons, and they may be legitimate to you.
Right.
They're your reasons, whatever they are. And if you're not going to get vaccinated, you're not going to vaccinate it. But I think now, if you could be like kind of like convinced with free shit, it's like how strong was your conviction to begin with. And, you know, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because there's a bunch of stuff we want to talk about. But, you know,
there are also people
as much as I love our country and, you know, and I'm proud to be an American, you know, at the same time, this is kind of like American.
The epitome of
American, like we're spoiled, entitled brats. Because while the rest of the world, you know,
they're making lines for like 3 days.
Even Europe, Europe, that, you know, we're not talking about third world countries. We're talking about like, you know, allies, first world countries in Europe, developed countries, you know, even in Canada, in freaking Canada, like they don't have the access to vaccines that we do.
Right.
And here now you got to freaking bribe people with freaking tractors and vacations and lottery tickets and donuts. I mean, I'll take all of that. I'll do a lot of things for a donut.
I'll figure out where to put the tractor.
Yeah. But it's like, coño, you know, like the rest of the world is
like there's a shortage.
There's like pain, and here we are, us entitled Americans.
Fine.
And granted, again,
we're not talking about people who are
there's certain conviction. People who still haven't gotten vaccinated because of lack of access. You know, there's a distrust of, you know, something like a vaccination among certain communities, especially communities of color, who have been burned by, you know, previous issues with
Tuskegee. You know, anyone?
Yes, and all that. So I could certainly understand there's a certain part of the populace that is weary of vaccines.
Right.
But for like everybody else, I mean, really, you need a tractor to convince you.
Uber is now even letting you, I think it's take free Uber up to like $25, I think, each way.
They're giving like free community college and scholarships. Like, why cancel the student debt if you could just get a COVID vaccine? Like,
oh, they're going to send you an edible arrangement.
Like, this is the type of stuff that people over abroad look at us and be like, those freaking Americans, you know, they think the world revolves around them. And it's like, it's true. Because it's like, coño, you know, in freaking Canada,
which is America, like, with more manners.
With more manners, and maple syrup, you know, and hockey.
Poutine.
Oh, poutine. Why hasn't poutine made it to, like...
It's like all of our favorite things. I think it's the name.
Poutine?
I think it's poutine. Because some places will have poutine, but they'll call them disco fries.
Yes.
But then but some people don't like
French
disco.
French fries... smothered with gravy
and cheese
curds. I mean, what is there not to like about that?
I mean, that was created in Canada, but let's be honest, that's American.
Yeah, that's like clog your arteries American.
Yeah.
But I mean, come on, people, like, get a grip. But anyway, something that I wanted to bring up, being that this is our first show in June, so it's Pride Month.
Happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride, everybody. Well, last year, Pride was canceled, along with everything else.
Yeah, well, Pride existed. I sent little cards to all of my friends across the country as a
way to celebrate the Pride. And this year, a lot of events are going through, even if smaller.
Wilton is having their Pride event.
I think it's later.
It's this month, June 19th.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to be there.
But anyway... What I wanted to talk specifically about was that I know that the New York Pride, and I think other
it's
cities,
happening.
But it is happening. But the New York Pride has banned the police,
from being present
at the event. When I first heard this, I thought about logistics.
Right.
I thought that the organizers of the Pride event did not want to hire. I don't know why this is why where my mind went to. That the organizers of the Pride event did not want to hire the police. That they probably would hire private security because there needs to be security in such a big event. That they didn't want to hire the police. I don't know why that's what I thought
of. That's the logical.
I thought about a logistics you know, reason. But actually, when I read more into it and I looked into it further, they're pretty much banning police. So they're banning a lot of the different unions and
yeah, there's a lot of people who have floats and
floats that march, are from police unions and from police stations that are obviously gay officers that celebrate Pride or even allies, whatever. But there is a presence of police. There has been a presence of police.
That marches in the parade.
That marches in the parade in New York City and everywhere.
Yes.
And this year, they're not allowed. They cannot wear.
See, I didn't know that. I thought it was just I just thought it was the security element.
No, they're not allowed. They're not invited. They're not wanted at the parade.
That's so accepting. Wow.
They're not invited. So if you are
gay and you happen to be a cop
and a police officer and you're proud of being gay and open and proud, in uniform, and proud. You can't.
Because you're a cop.
In the parade. And
that's fucking ridiculous. And
I tried to see this from, you know me, I always try to see both sides of the story.
No, there is no both sides of the story.
Let me say this. Not everybody knows, but for those who don't know, Pride did start with the Stonewall events in June of 1964.
I don't remember
1969. Yes. When Judy Garland died.
That's right. Yes.
Right. That is how Pride started, and what really was started that event on that night at the Stonewall Inn,
which has
become a landmark, was that not only was it a gay bar, but there were also a lot of trans men and women.
Well, it was an LGBT bar, but at that time we didn't use the
drag queens and all that. Mm-hmm. And basically, the police was like kind of profiling different gay bars. And what really started the Stonewall riot, if you want to call it, was that these at that time called transvestites fought back against police. And through bricks, through shoes,
Marsha P. Johnson is credited as starting the riot.
So I certainly understand that what started Pride was kind of like an anti-police.
It was an act of rebellion.
Rebellion.
Absolutely.
Specifically against the police.
Absolutely.
Right? But the police, since then.
But 50 years later.
For some time now, the police and police unions and the police force has had a presence in Pride. So what I am trying to like scratch my head about. I mean, I know that the police right now in general, their stock is low, especially after that summer. And we talked in here about at length why that is. And it is correct. You know, the police has a history.
We need to reevaluate.
And need to be reevaluate. And there's 100 things wrong that need to be fixed within different police departments in the country. But I'm trying to see both sides of it, but I feel that you are excluding a group of people that happen to be cops out of an event and a movement that its whole purpose
is to show that we're everywhere.
Inclusivity and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So that's kind of what I wanted to touch on, to see kind of what your views were on it, because I've tried to wrap my head around it. Like,
here's the thing. And it's that's why I'm saying it's bullshit, because I've told you this before. You know, and this ties into a bigger thing that we're currently experiencing this year with Pride that I'll touch on. But
the corporate sponsorships?
Yeah. It's that bullshit thing of like, you know, oh my God, be proud to be gay, be proud to be gay. Oh no, but don't be gay that way.
Right.
No. Why are you giving into heteronormative and why are you being straight acting? And it's like, because who I fuck.
Did intersectionality come out somewhere?
Don't even get me started on that goddamn road. But it's like, you know, who I go to bed with does not dictate how I have to act, how I have to dress, how I have to appear. If I do not feel comfortable as a gay man wearing a dress in public, you know what? So be it. I'm not going to negate you doing it if you wish to do that as a drag queen. I'm not going to negate your reality as a trans person. Like, there's no, it's this thing of that. It's like, if you are
It's a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah, if you are part of the LGBT plus community, you have to act a certain way. And it's the same thing that people like, let's go back to the election where they're like, oh, you know, Latinos are not a monolith, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's this thing like, if you're Latino, then you must eat, you know, salsa. Right, if you're black, you must do this.
That's like, actually a really good way of putting it.
And it's that, like, that no.
Being gay or being part of the gay community is not a monolith.
It's not a monolith.
Yes.
You know, listen, I respect Lady Gaga as a performer, not a huge fan.
Right. Oh.
Okay, come at me, little monsters.
The little monsters come are going to go with the tiki torches to your house.
Come at me, little monsters.
You know, and I
but
just...
But that annoys me. That annoys me to no avail. And I
see the whole thing about cops.
Are they saying that gay police officers are not valid members of the community?
Right, the way that I see it is... You know, if you, you know, being an officer is something that's a very male, like alpha male,
right.
You know,
frat boy
kind of institution.
Traditionally, yeah.
Right. So for you to be an open gay man and a cop,
you know,
that takes a certain amount of balls.
That's a
to
man.
Do that.
That's a man, know, or a woman. Like that's a
of courage to
right,
do that.
Right.
And for you to not now be allowed to be a cop and be proud of the work that you
right.
do and also be out and be
proud of
pride
who you are.
Who you are, then I feel that kind of
you're missing the point.
Mark.
You're missing the point.
That misses the mark a bit. And right. I understand that.
And
again,
maybe it's about how the conversation, again, we were not part of these conversations. Maybe again, the phrasing is that they were banned. Had they had that conversation and said, listen, we just think that maybe this year you guys should sit it out. Because what we don't want, because we understand that right now there's a certain feeling towards the police, and we would hate for your float or your group or whatever to come down the street and feel animosity when that is not what this parade is about. So we would, you know, we'd prefer if you maybe think it over and maybe not be part of the parade this year, just because for your own consideration and your own safety, we don't want to put you in that position. Again, maybe that's a conversation that was had, but not based on what we're reading.
No, I don't think.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah, based on what we're reading, that, it's...
was like the organizer said no.
It's
no.
You are not allowed to be part of our
community.
Here's
my thing on it. The moment you start excluding people...
Where does it stop?
Because then next year, they could come and say, well, you know, we're not allowing people in uniform and military to come. Because military, until
right.
The
don't
Obama,
ask, don't tell.
Don't ask, don't tell. Until the Obama administration just a few years ago.
Right.
You know, and the military stood for all these things and all that. So are we now not going to allow veterans and you know...
Right. Where does it end?
Other people, men and women that have been in the military and have served... Right. Their country with pride and also have
pride
in who they are to be part of these.
Yeah.
You know, because the thing, especially with military, is that their uniform is very much a part of that. And that's something that, you know what, you and I will probably never understand because we didn't wear the
uniform.
We're
not in the military.
But, you know, that's why they wear when there's an event. That's why they wear when they get married, because that's very much very symbolic of who they are, right? So it's very a part of them.
Let's bring it a little closer to home. You and I are Cuban American, all right? Traditionally, historically, Cuban Americans are what? Conservative Republicans.
Yeah.
So if right now I want to go out there and have a Cuban American float in a pride parade, are you going to come and tell me like, no, because historically your culture or your whatever has been, too conservative and anti blah, 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 blah.
Right. Right. So yeah, that's the problem. The moment you start excluding people, no matter how
righteous
justified
or...
you think you are opening the door to further exclusion. And your intentions may be good, but you know what? The road to hell is paved with
good intentions. That's true.
And that's why, like, I've tried to wrap my head around this from both sides, and I could certainly see the argument of that is against the police. I certainly see it. I understand it.
It's not the right time for them to be.
We've talked on this show at length about the problems with officers and the problem with systematic racism and systematic, you know, targeting
discrimination
of police in general.
Right.
And it's certainly an issue.
Right.
But again, excluding a group of people is a problem. Yeah. And to go further on what you said about corporate sponsorships, because that's something I've seen a lot on my feed, blow up.
And I go ahead and do it, but I'm actually going to read a post from a friend of mine.
On people that are like, yeah, now it's June and all these big corporate sponsors, you know, will have rainbows, you know, everywhere, right. You know, buy from local gay shops.
Which, sure.
That's great. I mean, if you want to buy from your local gay-owned store, whatever business it is, more power to you. But the counter-argument I will provide to this is as follows. Do companies do it to make money? Of course.
Fine.
Of course, they do it.
A company is not a charity.
But I think that if you are either somebody who's closeted or especially a young person, mm-hmm. who you're coming to terms with your sexuality and you're trying to figure things out and you're intimidated to come out, whatever it may be, I think to see a big corporate sponsor like Nike,
right,
Oreo,
support you,
come out with full-blown like pride gear,
right,
I think that gives you a sense of like, you know,
if
these huge corporations are doing it, then this is not as, obviously it has its obstacles in it.
But, you know, right, but it's not as taboo as it was.
It gives you a certain amount of encouragement.
Right, recognition.
And recognition. And that can mean the world, mm-hmm. to someone. That can mean everything to someone. Yeah. And I think that just saying a blanket statement like, oh, you know, boycott like big companies that have, you know, pride stuff.
Right.
That's really dismissing.
It's myopic.
It's dismissing the value that can have to a lot of people. And also, which is the last thing I'll say about that, is that, you know, well, being gay nowadays is not what it used to be. Like, most people in this country are okay with it. Most people agree.
No, at least one person who's openly gay.
Yeah, and most Americans, right, by majority, it is not like a 50-51.
Right.
You know, the majority, I think it's like 70-some percent.
Yeah. Just don't care. At the end of the day,
well, they agree, they are for, but that's, but equal marriage. So this is something that there's still a lot of work to be done,
right,
but it's something that we as a country have made strides in.
Right.
But I do think that whatever it is, whether in this topic we're talking about, mm-hmm. you know, pride and being gay, I do think that familiarity and, yeah, leads to a certain amount of acceptance. And I think that, yeah, when people see big corporations, big, you know, big shows, you know, whether all these like really mainstream staples,
right,
not only embrace pride, but go out of their way to like celebrate pride.
Right.
Because in a lot of shows now, pride is celebrated like Black History Month. Like,
oh yeah, a lot of channels have a pride like on air promos.
Like on The View, they now have, I don't know if they're doing it this year because of the pandemic, it's all messed up, but they always have like what they have on Black History Month. Like, oh, today in pride history, so-and-so was the first LGBT person to blah, 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 blah.
And like they did for Hispanic Heritage Month, which, you know, they did it because of you, as we established.
Yes.
Right.
Last year.
Yes.
I think that goes a long way. And I think that that is one of the many ways, it's not the only way, that people become accustomed to what they see. And a lot of times when people are afraid of what they don't see or don't understand or are not familiar with.
Yeah.
So becoming familiar with something is one of the many forms of
acceptance
and of moving on. Yeah. So I just, you know, I think that this is one of these topics that there's certain people that want to dictate and want to steal the narrative.
It's like I've said, it's this thing of like, you know, oh my God, we need to be accepted. We need to be accepted. And then the corporations come out and they're like, no, but that's not how you accept. Well, what do you want? Because the fact that they're recognizing you, you know what? Of course they want your money. They're a business. They're not in it for volunteerism, you know? And I will say, I teared up a little bit this week because, again, as a child of the 80s, you know, we were very into He-Man, Masters of the Universe. And I follow the official Masters of the Universe Instagram profile. And on June 1st, what they did was they took an image of the of the He-Man sword,
sword,
and they did it as the pride, as the pride flag. Like, you know what? That as a kid who grew up in the 80s, before any, you know, there was this widespread acceptance or whatever, to see a brand that I grew up with that I loved as a child embrace that. Mm-hmm. You know what? That means a lot to me.
Yes,
and that hit me in all the feels.
Yes,
and
you are a full grown adult. Imagine if you, again, are an adolescent,
right?
You know, and you are you know, you're not sure on things.
You're going through stuff. Yeah.
It out. That means the world to people, because you know what? When you are there in your room and you think that, you know, people aren't going to accept you, and you think that, you know, the world is against you, and coño, you see freaking Nike come out with a pride shoe.
Yeah.
You know, that may be very tangible and very fluffy, but it's like, coño.
But there's a weight to it.
Yes.
There is a weight to it.
That didn't exist when we were kids.
No, no.
And it's not like we were kids, you know, generations ago.
Right.
You know, we were kids in the 90s, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like that did not exist as
at all.
Early as, not even the early 2000s that existed, you know.
I mean, it's gotten better progressively every 10 years or so. But yeah.
So I think people need to, like, just shut up and let people do you, you know.
Embrace.
If you want to buy the Nike Pride shoes, buy them. If you don't want to buy them, don't buy them.
Yeah.
If you want to buy soap from the local lesbian store, then go and buy it.
And lesbians do make the best soap.
I know, right?
They do. It's just their thing. Those ladies know how to whittle. They do.
Anyway. Pero. Yes. Something else I kind of wanted to touch upon. Because this is something that I feel that in the last few years, every year it's gotten a little bit more attention, and it's one of those things that, like,
the World Music Awards.
Yes,
finally, we're talking about Prince Monaco.
Okay,
the Prince of Monaco.
Is the World Music Awards even going on?
I'm sure he still gives them out. If I was a prince, I would.
Well, that's true. You know who probably has gone to the World Music Awards?
Rita Ora?
No. Juan Patron. But that we'll leave that to another conversation. But something I wanted to mention just not briefly, but just recognize it is that this week was also the 100th year anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre.
That's correct.
And if you don't know what the Tulsa Massacre is of 1921...
We don't fault you.
Don't feel too bad.
I learned about it like maybe 5 years ago.
It's something that only in the last few years, it's been talked about, especially on a national level.
Yeah. If you saw the Watchmen miniseries on HBO, it actually starts with that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And so basically what the Tulsa Race Massacres was there was this incident in Tulsa. It wasn't actually in Tulsa. It was like a little suburb off Tulsa.
That was the Black Wall Street, right?
Yes, where I think was it Evanston or Edgartown? I forgot the name now, but it was a suburb of Tulsa. That there was supposedly a situation where allegedly a young black man assaulted a white woman in an elevator.
Yes.
Which was later found not to be...
Yeah, to be false.
To be false. And what happened was that he was arrested. And
he was a kid.
He was a kid. He was arrested. They took him to the courthouse or whatever. And a mob formed overnight. Mm-hmm. And the next morning, the mob was bigger. And late afternoon, the mob was bigger. And bigger. And before you knew it was thousands of people. So then these people...
White mob. Let's be clear.
Later, the suburb we're talking about of Tulsa was a very, very successful black neighborhood, which they called the Black Wall Street because it was the epicenter of a lot of very successful black-owned businesses, and they made a lot of money.
Yeah,
there was
prosperity.
Very successful. You have to remember that this was in the 1920s, so this was only 60 years off of the Civil War,
which is nothing.
And here was this flourishing black neighborhood or black part of the town.
Upwardly mobile.
That this mob went and decimated.
Acabaron.
And they killed several people, were violently murdered. And they burned the houses down, burned the buildings down.
I mean, the neighborhood was left in ruins.
Yes.
There was nothing left. Yeah.
And over something that not only turned out to be false, but even if it was true,
it was true.
It doesn't matter.
That's not the proper reaction. Yeah.
And all the, you know, the black families, they had to flee.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they were going to kill them. They had to flee. And this was thrown under the rug for a century.
Yeah.
For almost a century. And I think it's very important for people to know this, because whenever people go and say, systematic racism doesn't exist in this country. Right. The Civil War happened 150 years ago, right, blah, right. blah, blah. Yes, the Civil War did happen over 150 yes. Years ago. But systematic racism...
There's ramifications for stuff, peeps.
...was a problem. It continues to be a problem. Yeah. And look at this situation where an entire town was decimated because of...
And let's be honest... The quote-unquote reason was, you know, the kid who was accused of assaulting a white woman.
Yeah.
But let's call it what it is. The reality of it is this also may have... there was an overlay because this was a successful black
neighborhood. Oh, of course. Of course. They wanted to quash them.
They were not going to have black people be successful.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. They wanted to quash
them. They were not going to let that happen.
So, you know, when... That's why I always tell people, like... You know, that people that are very quick to make judgments as to race relations in our country.
Right.
It's
not that simple, peeps.
It's not that simple. And you really have to know and understand American history in a totality to really know why we continue to have the problems that we have.
And because as we know, American history has been not
whitewashed.
To borrow a phrase, whitewashed. Yeah.
Well, it has been whitewashed.
Yeah.
But even...
So we're to your point, but almost 100 years later, now finding out this. Even with
very well-known events, you know, from slavery to the Civil War to Jim Crow to now the Tulsa Massacre to many, many, many other.
In between,
You know, in that book that I've read, Caste, you know, there's a part in the book that they talk about. The subject is about water. And I'm like water?
Drinking water?
No. How, like... You know, black Americans were not allowed to go to the beach, and they were not allowed to go to municipal swimming pools, and how there were people who were lynched and were like killed and dragged because they want to go swimming in their town swimming pool, and how they give the story of this little boy who had just been part of a winning little league team, and the little league team, which I imagine was predominantly white, and he was probably the only black little boy, they went to celebrate at this pool. And he couldn't go inside the pool. So then the coaches kind of spoke to the lifeguards and were like, please, you know, we won and
yeah, but whatever. Right.
So they had to get everybody outside of the pool. They put him on a raft and put him around the pool, and he couldn't touch the water. Because if you touch the water, you could, you know...
Like in the Halle Berry movie, Dorothy Dangerouch.
You would contaminate it,
Do you remember that scene?
No, you know, I never saw that movie.
I never saw the movie, but I saw the one scene where Dorothy Dandridge was huge star, but of course during segregation, and she goes to this one hotel and she goes out and they're like, oh, Miss Dandridge, you can't be out here. You know, that whole thing, whatever. And she gets pissed off and she's fed up and she goes and she just dips her toe in the pool and she's like, I guess now you'll have to drain it.
Well, there we go. So those are the things that people have to know. And look, this type of history exists everywhere because look, here in Miami, in the heart of 8th Street of Little Havana, right by Azúcar and Ball and Chain, there is a building, and I forgot the name of the building now, but it's one of the buildings right off of 8th Street by Azúcar and Ball and Chain. I think it's called the Victor Hotel or Victory Hotel.
Okay, I know the hotel you're talking about because they had an event there.
Right. So the history with that hotel, that building, was that used to be a hotel. And in the 1920s, 30s, and before the Civil Rights Act of 1964, people often forget that Miami Beach is a separate city, a municipality from Miami. So they have their own
rules.
So at that time, prior to the Civil Rights Act of 1964, if you were black and you were an entertainer in Miami Beach, and we're talking about like Ray Charles, Sammy Davis Jr.
Dizzy Gillespie,
iconic names. If you went to the beautiful Fountain Blue,
you could perform.
You would perform. You they would love you. You could perform, but you could not stay at a hotel in the city of Miami Beach.
You had to go.
So you had to go and stay in the city of Miami. And there's this building again. It's right there off of 8th Street.
I think they're renovating it.
That used to be a hotel, and a lot of these black entertainers and performers stayed there because they weren't allowed to.
I think that's actually the setting for One Night in Miami.
the Regina King movie.
Yes.
Which I want to see, but I have not seen.
I believe that hotel is a setting.
And this is something that is right in our backyard. And I bet you that most people don't know the history of that building.
Yeah.
So that's why I always tell people when they're kind of like have comments about race, you know, the race relations right. in our country. It's like you really have to know American history and know what we've been through to really understand where we are today. And, yeah. you know, it's a complicated and hard reality, but it is what it is, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's no way for me to segue into today's guests from that. But I will say, you know, one of today's guests stars on a primetime sitcom that has two Latina leads. So there's representation. There's, you know, progress. This week, our guests are Melissa Fumero and David Fumero. And as you say, within like, I think the first 5 minutes, they are our first married couple guests. Our
first married couple.
That we've ever had on the show. You know, I'm sure you know Melissa Fumero from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, as well as many other things. And David Fumero, of course, he's an actor, but he's also a very iconic model. He's the, and we get into this, he was part of the Jean-Paul Gaultier Lamail.
And it's just like.
And also featured in a video that may or may not star DJ's favorite songstress.
And if you
ever
listen to 159
and
episodes,
and you don't know who that is,
if you don't know who that is, yeah, está mal.
So yeah, it was a great conversation. And so without further ado, we have Melissa and David Fumero. This is a public service announcement from the organization Fathers Who Want Better Gifts.
Hey all, DJ here. On behalf of all the dads, this Father's Day, I'm here to say we want better gifts. We want better gifts. Come on, we all love being the best dad, but do we really need a mug telling us so? Or better yet, a tie? Thanks to quarantine, people are barely wearing pants, much less formal wear. Come on. But you know what makes a great gift? A pair of the perfect jeans. No, that's really their name. The perfect jean. These soft, stretchy, and durable jeans come in several fits and use high-quality materials and techniques. And let's face it, most of us dads gained a few pounds during COVID, so we could use a little room in our pants these days. And the best thing about giving the perfect jeans for Father's Day? You can save cash while doing it. Visit theperfectjean.nyc today and use PERO20 for 20% off your first order. That's right. Dad will be proud you saved 20% using PERO20 on his gift. So this Father's Day, get your perfect dad or dad figure the perfect jean and use code PERO20 for 20% off your first order. Happy Father's Day.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, mi gente. So, as we mentioned, we have with us today two Cuban-American actors, creators, parents, quite frankly, one of the most damn attractive couples I've ever seen in my life. We have with us Melissa and David Fumero. Thank you guys for joining us so much.
Welcome to Better Let Me Tell You.
Thank you for having us.
We have never had a married couple as guests of the show, so you're the first.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. So, you know, again, thank you guys for joining us. You know, now that he said married couple, I guess, you know, let's touch base on that just for a moment. You guys have been together for a bit now. I know you guys met, you were both on One Life to Live at the time, right? Now, what are the odds that two Cuban American actors would be on the same novela and then meet and fall in love?
It was funny when I first got the job, my dad was on the computer and he was like looking up. That's like what, like as soon as I book something, he like looks it up on the internet, you know? And so I remember he was like in our basement. I was at my parents' house in Jersey. And I just hear from the basement, like, "Hey, there's a Cuban guy on your show." And I was like, "What?" Like,
with a heavier accent.
With a heavier accent, yeah.
Oh my God, was that the first time you ever heard of him?
My dad. Yeah, yeah. And then, but then when I started, he had left and he came like a year later. And when he was coming back, it was like, David Fumero's coming back. It was like, there was buzz in the hallways. And I was like, oh. And then it was like, he's a player, which he's not, but he had
It was phase, because my side of the story is I was in LA and I turned on the TV one day. I was like, let me see what these guys are up to. Because I've been on and off on the soap. Mm-hmm. And I turn on the TV and I see her on camera. So right away, I pick up the phone and I call a friend of mine who's a director on the show. And I said, who's this new girl? Who's she playing? What's going on? Where's she from? Tell me everything. And she said, oh, she's Cuban, you know? I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah, but she has a boyfriend. I was like, all right. So that later on, a couple months, three, four, 5 months later, they asked me back on the show. I go back. My first day in the makeup room, she was sitting in a makeup chair. Wow. First thing I said, I went up to her talking in Spanish, you know, like, un cubanito, and what's up, eh? What's your name? I heard you're Cuban, all in Spanish. And she turns and looks at me, she goes, I don't speak Spanish. I'm like, what?
Because I had been
Jersey told Cuban, man, Jersey Cuban.
Because I had been told he was a player, so I was like, oh, here he comes, trying to, and I was like, no.
That's a pretty good story. That's a great story. So now that we're talking a little bit about your past in the soap opera, you know, I don't think we've ever had anybody who's been on a soap opera before on the show. I've always been really curious as to the shooting schedules for soap operas because, like, amount of content that is produced is, like, insane. So tell us a little bit about how is the process?
Yeah, well, we do, like, 100 pages a day that we did, right?
Jesus.
Yeah, and there are no read-throughs. You have, like, a little cubby, and they just stick your scripts in there, and then...
A week before.
But you shoot, like, 6 episodes a week. So you're shooting, like, different parts of different episodes all the time. And so you just go to your little cubby and you like get all your script pages. And then it really is that like actor trope of like bullshit, 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 my line. And you just like take out your scenes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wouldn't even read the whole script because there just would be a lot going on and I didn't need to know what was happening in the other scenes.
That must have been great when she watched an episode. She must have watched episodes later and been like, huh, so-and-so's dead now. Good to know.
Yeah, like, sometimes. And and then I would say the average was like 30 pages a day.
I did like 50 something pages one day. I mean, it's so.
I think my record was like 80 something. It was insane.
So much, and it doesn't happen all the time. But when it does happen, it's so much that at points in between when you're acting, you really don't know what you're saying. You just say words. You know what I mean? And a lot of the time, and soaps don't really move. They either move really fast in story or they don't move.
A lot of repetition.
So it's a lot of repetition, and it's harder to memorize when things don't move forward.
It's not exactly Shakespeare either, so...
Because you don't shoot chronologically. Like, as you said, you shoot, like, pieces here and there, and then they...
You don't shoot necessarily chronologically within the day, but you do shoot the same episode. Sometimes you'll shoot one episode. Most of the time it's chronologically, but sometimes, depending on the actors that go in before and after... Mm-hmm. But in a week of 5 days, we'll shoot 5 episodes plus pieces of like 2 more. It's a lot of work, and soap actors, man, they don't get enough credit, man.
I have mad respect for soap actors. Just I mean,
cause it's one tough. Take. Like what you see, that's one take.
Yeah, really.
If you go past 2, it's like you're taking up time.
Well, when I first started, you go through it in the morning, then you have a dress rehearsal. No, then you have a blocking, then you have a dress rehearsal, then you shoot it. By the time you got there, you go through it in the morning, you get up on set, you block shoot.
Yeah.
So they basically tell you where to stand, and then, okay, let's go, let's shoot.
That's it.
And ideally, you get it the first take. If you go more than two times, you know.
I literally watched a girl get fired once. She took like 13 takes. She kept forgetting her line. I was so young, and I felt like I was going to have an anxiety attack because I was like, oh, my God, they're going to fire her. They're going to fire her. Like, yeah, just felt so bad. She was gone the next day.
Well,
yeah.
You can't. You have to get things done because there's so much material to get through the day. You can't. Yeah. You know,
they don't care. They just limited. Want to get it done.
I was really curious about it because Ish and I went in 2019. We were lucky enough to be invited to a taping of Fuller House on from Netflix. You know, and it took all day to do a half hour show, like all day,
and they were rehearsing all week.
Yes, and they did, like, they would shoot everything, what was it, four times? Even if it wasn't, like, a mess-up, they'd shoot every scene, like, four times. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, like, soap operas, you know, 5 days a week, an hour, you don't have, like, a season, it's just...
Oh, it is. I mean, for my first film, years and years ago, my first film, when I was on the show, I remember doing the first scene and being like, that's it? Oh, we'll do it again, we'll do this shot. We'll do the same scene, like, you know... five different times from different, and it was an independent, and it had to move fast, but still, their fast to me was like,
yeah,
and slow, you know, like, come on, let's get the scene done, because you're so used to the, you know?
That's crazy. So, now, because, you know, we brought up sitcoms, obviously, Melissa, you know, you're on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know, the character of Amy, Santiago, right, is her last name?
Yeah.
I freaking love your character. Your character is, like, so many girls that I went to school with. Literally because, you know, not just the personality, but because you're Cuban American and we're from Miami. So, you know, was that always the goal? Was the character always going to be Latina? Was she always going to be Cuban American? Or is that something that as they kind of went through the process, they're like, okay, she's Latina. And then when we land the right person for the role, we'll, you know, see where that goes.
I mean, in general, they sort of, you know, casted Brooklyn with the people they really wanted. And Amy was, I remember, I think it was like Latina or open ethnicity. Like there, I think there was like something about her being Latina in the character breakdown. But I remember even when I went for the screen test kind of seeing not just Latinas, you know. Mm-hmm. The character of Rosa was actually open because like Chelsea Peretti and Stephanie Beatrice both auditioned for that role, and then they ended up writing Gina for Chelsea and making Rosa. They changed the name, I think, for the audition it was like Megan or something, and they changed it to Rosa Diaz for Stephanie. Yeah, and then after I cast it, they made her Cuban American because I'm Cuban, so they didn't have that specified first. It became that because of me. And honestly, like, it's also, especially thinking about 8 years ago, like, we forget sometimes how much has changed in a great way in terms of representation. But when the show first started, the amount of Latinas I heard from that were like, oh, my God, I've never seen a Latina who's book smart, who's dorky, who can't dance, who's socially awkward, who's not like spicy or like doing any of the stereotype or tropes, you know, like she can't even freaking dance, like was just,
and Melissa's a dancer,
and
so that's like hard to play. Like,
I was gonna say, because I mean, David, I know that you were born in Cuba, so I'm assuming you can dance, and I'm, you know, I would hate to think, you know, a mismatched couple.
No,
in that way.
No, we love to dance.
Okay. No, por si acaso, I'm just saying, you know.
Por si acaso.
But for representation's sake, I definitely knew that, you know, shout out to the Latinas who can't dance, who have trouble. But yeah, so it was, and it was so moving, you know, like it's, you don't realize, especially with young women, like how starved they can be for a certain character until you sort of fill that void. And then it's really, it's emotional and inspiring to hear the response from that.
Yeah. And something on Brooklyn, really, we get two Latinas. We get, you know,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches.
We were like, they're going to fire one of us. Like, The reason Stephanie's hair is wavy on the show and mine is straight is because nobody told us to do this, by the way. We were so scared of getting fired. We couldn't believe they were letting two Latinas on a network show that before our first, like, you have a big table read when you're picked up to series for the whole, like, network and studio, and it's like 50 people. It's so intimidating for a table read. And we were like, I was like, I think we should wear our hair different. And Stephanie was like, yeah, absolutely. And she was like, I have trouble getting my hair straight. I was like, I don't. So I'll do straight hair. No one asked us to do that, but we were so scared. We were like, we have to look as different as possible.
Straight hair, curly hair. So something I love the show, and something I've always been curious about that, you know, that entourage, that ensemble is, you know, I'm like a huge fan of Andy Samberg. I was on SNL. I love the Lonely Island. Do you guys, like, I assume, but I may be wrong, that, like, working with all these people must be like a riot. Like, how fun is it? Or are you guys totally, like, just very professional, like, nobody cracks jokes? Like, how's that set?
You could say, because when you guest starred.
Yeah, it's the most chillest, funnest, you know, a bunch of friends just hanging out.
All day.
Having fun, making each other laugh. Yeah, I was there for a day. I was so intimidated, so scared. But, you know, I mean, I'm her husband. Everybody was really nice to me. And then you sit there and you watch how the machine works. And it's a bunch of kids having fun, you know, and trying to make things funnier and funnier. And it's awesome. Awesome energy.
Yeah, we spend a large part of the day laughing and making each other laugh.
That's awesome. Because so many times with, like, comedies, you hear, like, different actors or just comedians that they're very temperamental and all this, and it's like, oh, you know, obviously your personal life is your personal life, but, you know, sometimes it's like there's a part of you that wishes that's how they really were in real life. So
yeah, so. And, you know, it's like, it's a trickle-down kind of thing. It starts at the top, and we're just lucky that Andy is the loveliest person, is the nicest person, is warm and open, makes everyone feel welcome, and is really professional and, you know, wants to add to every scene and make it funnier and is inclusive in that process. Mm-hmm. And so when you're lead actors like that, like, nobody can be a dick. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, everyone's got to fall in line. And we just got lucky that this cast gelled from day one, and you know, we really are like a little family.
I mean, I was so scared when I worked on Brooklyn that I remember Andy, there was one line I said, and Andy came up to me. He's like, you know, it's really funny the way you're saying that line. And I looked at him, and I didn't even, I was so locked that I was like, oh, cool. I mean, because my breath is just finished, it's cool, thanks. And then I'm thinking, Andy Samberg thought I was funny. I better do it like that again.
No pressure.
Yeah, fuck.
So I do want to ask you about your latest project, Melissa, which is you're voicing a character on MODOK. But before I do that, I actually wanted to, you know, you guys are parents now. And again, being the first married couple that we have, and you're both Cuban-American, do you guys ever find yourselves just looking at your kid just being like, carajo, chiquito, I told you not to, like, do you, she's pointing at David, do you, because again, I know, David.
I got them used to, when they were toddlers, like toddlers and just started walking, I got them used to, like, I got them used to that kind of stuff. Because I don't want, you know, when he got older, I didn't want him to be offended by his dad. But I'm like, you know, these are certain things that I have to let out of myself to be yes. really Cuban, especially living in L.A. I don't know a lot of Cubans here. It's not like Miami, you know?
I was going to say, like, because you came to this country, how old were you when you came, David?
Eight. I was 8 years old.
So, I mean, you were old, you know, older. Like, I'll say you came as a kid. Yeah. Like a baby. So there's,
not a baby.
And where did you first land when you got here?
I came in 1980. I was part of the last group of, you know, political prisoners were being allowed asylum in the country. My dad was a political prisoner in Cuba. Mm-hmm. So we flew in, and then it was in January. I think Mariel was like 2 months later. Like, we would have been in Mariel if we hadn't got a visa. You know what I mean?
Wow. That you came at the same time I came, because I actually was born there too. I came when I was a year old. And we came like in February, a couple of months before the Mariel boat lift.
Right before, yeah. So
when you say you came from Cuba in 1980, everybody assumes I was in the Maria.
That was like a major offense. I mean,
yeah,
one of Marielito, that was like a bad word, you know?
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, I remember defending myself. No, I flew here.
Yeah.
But
it was a thing.
Like now, as an adult, you realize the things that you know, when you were a kid, it's just.
So now that we're talking a little bit about your like background in terms of, you know, your parents were born and raised in Cuba, you know, Cubans are not necessarily the most open people when it comes down to like the arts and acting and modeling and creatives. So you were a very successful model and are. And one of your more iconic pictures or campaign was Le Male with from Jean-Paul Gaultier. So how did that conversation go down with, like, your family? Like, where you showed them these, like, very artistic pictures, you know? How did that go down?
I mean, eventually they were, I think they were always proud, you know? For me, modeling was like, I'd been in the military. I didn't work out. I came back home. I signed myself up in Miami-Dade, so I was going to school. I had, like, 2-3 jobs. You know, Sunday was my only day off. I worked at nightclubs, so I barely slept. And I had a girlfriend who had dated a big model and had a really good friend who was a model. And she'd been telling me, like, listen, you should do this on the side. You can make some extra money. It wouldn't be so hard. And, you know, after, like, a long time, it's not for me. Yeah, I can't. Imagine me in my underwear. No way.
And some people go looking, por favor.
And then finally one day I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot. Go. She showed me a receipt of one of her friend's checks. I'm like, you made that much money? I'm like, all right, cool. I'll try it. So I was a big dude then. So I lost all this weight and I went, took a picture. And, you know, one of my first gigs was like Versace carrying Christy Turlington on the beach in Miami.
Wow.
And I didn't even know who Versace was. Like I was clueless to any of this, you know? So things just kind of happened because, and this is, I also was lucky that this is when fashion kind of blew up in Miami. It was like the early 90s. Yeah. Things started, you know, it was a scene, you know, and I was in that scene. It just so happens. And modeling was always something that I had 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Like I was always, I would drop classes because I'd make all this money, but then I'd sign up again and then I couldn't make it because I got these jobs and I got to fly somewhere. And I'm like, you know what? My best friend, actually, I asked him one day, I was like, dude, what do I do, man? I'm not ever going to finish school. And I wanted to get it done. I didn't want to be in school forever. And he's like, listen, you know, you made last year what I'm going to make when I'm done. Why don't you just give this a shot and try it out? Mm-hmm. And, you know, my best friend, he's always been the voice of reason for me. So I was like, done. So I dropped out and then it just kind of took off. Like one thing after another happened. And I think it's like bait. I don't know. I can't explain it. I never aspired to be it. I never went for it. I didn't, you know, I was the kind of person that took care of myself and I liked to work out. So I had a, you know, good body, but that's it.
What did your mom think of your first underwear shot though?
I was always embarrassed. My mom, but my grandmother especially.
Yeah.
My grandmother, rest in peace. She was the best. She was the most loving grandma, but she was this, you didn't mess with her. Like she would, if you like mess with her too much, she'd do like this to you. You know, she'd pull her arm back like she was gonna slap you.
I was scared of her.
Grandmothers. That's why I was always curious of that because you know the pictures you did were very famous, or very iconic, and very artistic. And I always thought like, man, like if I was hit, like coming home and showing my parents, not that there was anything wrong with the pictures, but you know they don't see it in like the artistic way. They'll be like, why are you in your underwear? Like,
I didn't even discuss that with them for a long, long, long time. You know, eventually I find out that they're proud of me. You know, but I wasn't proud of me. I didn't think it was like this huge accomplishment. All I knew is that, you know, the more recognition you make, the more money you make. I just wanted to make money. I was like, okay, listen, if my rate's going to go up because I did this badass, you know, a designer's ad, then awesome. I'm in. But it wasn't, I was never into fashion. I was never into, I guess it was a different time because I think that kids nowadays are more connected with the internet and all that. So they, or back then I didn't.
We had to go buy magazines to learn those things. We didn't have the internet. Right.
Yeah. My magazines were comics or Muscle and Fitness later on when I started working out.
Well, Well, speaking of comics, thank you for setting me up there, David. That was a great segue. So, listen, I will be. You and I will figure out how to make like a Marvel X-Men podcast, because I'm looking at that Wolverine in your in the background there at your gym. And I, listen, fanboy and guano, you know what? That's a market right there. We'll figure it out later. But Melissa, I was about to call you Amy. You.
It happens all the time, and I'm flattered by it.
You have a project coming out now on Hulu. Mm-hmm. It's a voiceover. I don't know if to call it like a show, a cartoon, and you know, it defies description, shall we say?
Yes.
So an animated. Thank you. And I'm David. I'm going to keep you around just to set me up. Yes.
We should clarify the adult. Do not watch this with your children.
Yes, and it is starring. MODOK. So for those who aren't too familiar with the Marvel Universe, he is a villain. He's essentially a floating head that has arms and ears sticking out of him. And mm-hmm. I have a massive soft spot for him because I think he's so ridiculous that how nobody came up to do an animated, you know, comedy series with this ridiculous looking character is beyond me. But what can you tell us about, you know, about your role and about the series?
Yeah, well, what you thought is exactly what Patton Oswalt and our showrunner Jordan Blum thought as well. They were like, this character is so just hilarious just looking at him. He is like primed for comedy. And I think they were really intrigued by having a supervillain as like the main character of a show, but also like, what does he do when he's not being a supervillain? And so this show is about where he goes at night when he's done fighting Iron Man, and he goes home to his family, and his family is messed up like every other family because he is a supervillain. So I play his daughter, Melissa.
Who looks like him.
But she is like queen bee at her school, like the most popular. She owns it. She is an aspiring supervillain herself. She bedazzles her robot chair and she knows it all. She's like the most confident teenager you've ever seen. And really, but also just like really wants approval from her father, MODOK. And yeah, it's the scripts were hilarious. The cast is incredible. It's Patton Oswalt, me, Amy Garcia from Lucifer, Ben Schwartz from Parks and Rec, John Daly, Beck Bennett from SNL, Sam Richardson from Veep, and I'm forgetting some people. But yeah, it's an incredible cast. The scripts are so funny. It's funny and crass and vulgar and it goes there. So it's like a really different Marvel thing. Yeah, it's different than everything else that's sort of Marvel that's out right now, but it's a fun ride. So it comes out on May 21st on Hulu.
So when you do the work, we're getting a lot of behind the scenes from like your soap opera days and now voiceover work. When you do voiceover work, you go in and obviously you speak your lines, but is like other stuff already pre-recorded from the other voiceover actors, or like do you do it all at the same time to feed off of each other? How does that work?
No, so I actually recorded MODOK while I was shooting Brooklyn. So my schedule was like, had to be around my Brooklyn schedule when I could go in to record. So I didn't get to record with any of the actors. I think some of the other actors did get to have some sessions together. So I recorded all my lines by myself. Occasionally, they would be able to play me something that Patton had recorded. But mostly, it was like throwing a lot of blind faith and trust in Jordan and the team.
On Correct. You have a director in the outside the booth.
You have a director and you have Jordan, our showrunner, would be there for every, and he would read the scenes with me. And so, yeah. And then sometimes you're also just like taking line by line and doing like different versions of it, because in animation, you also record your performance before the animation is done. So like your performance right. kind of informs the animation. So you have a bit more freedom in that sense. And it's really fun. But yeah, it's like a lot of trust in the people that are behind the glass when you're in the booth and are, you know, giving you adjustments and a lot of times they're having, you know, so this is how, and it's, this explodes behind you and, you know, and then this Iron Man swoops in and yeah. And you kind of have to imagine it all in your head and you know, try to get it across in your voice. So, but they're really good at what they do. So, yeah.
Hey, listen, now that you did voiceover work, I mean, you're ready to be a podcast host. Like, that's it. Like,
I know, I got my microphone. That's I'm true. Ready.
tough stuff what we do, huh?
Yeah. No, but you know what, like sometimes, you know, we will obviously as an audience we see all these things and, you know, it's stuff that we wonder, like how, like the thing with voiceovers, like I've always wondered, do you get in like a room of, like all of you together, or do you just do it on your own? Now you mentioned a Brooklyn Nine-Nine again, so you guys have already shot and have you finished shooting? This is a final season, right?
This is the final season. We're about halfway through. We just wrapped on episode 5, shooting episode 6 this week, and we're doing 10. So, yeah, we have about a month and some left.
So maybe we'll see it in the fall, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if it's going to be fall or winter, but I'm guessing NBC will announce that soon.
I'm sure you guys are going to run with a bang.
Yeah, I think they have some fun stuff planned for, you know, to celebrate the final season, celebrate our run. We're all really proud to have made it this far and done this many seasons. And it's also, I think, just really lovely. And what we all wanted was to be able to end it and say when we're ending it and, right, like, enjoy this sort of victory lap. So we feel that on set with these episodes, and there's a lot of like nostalgic moments happening on set, and we're just all really grateful that, you know, we get to end it on our terms.
That's awesome.
So, David, there's something I have to ask you.
Uh-oh, I know where this is going.
So, I am a huge Mariah Carey fan. Like, huge. So, I have to ask you about the video for Honey. Like, I can't let this interview go by without asking you about that. So
notice how he waited, how we were like at the tail end of the interview too. He's like,
I don't know how that may go down. Maybe he goes down like, oh. I don't know how that may go down. So how did that happen? How did that happen? And how was that process?
Okay, so what I've heard, the story of how I got this, what I heard back then, this is what I taught, you know, it's like just being at the right place at the right time, fate. Supposedly Mariah had a hairstylist who recommended me and kept pushing and said, you got to use this guy for your video. And someone I worked with a bunch of times. I remember his face. I don't remember his name. So I was in Europe. It was the fashion shows in Milan, and I get a call, you know, we got the Mariah Carey video. They want to use you, and, you know, you just got to get here. I'm like, look, I just got here. I got a job tomorrow. There's no way I can do it. So they kept calling back and like, no, we need you right away, David. You got to do this final. I was like, yeah, I mean, shit, if they want me that bad, hell yeah, I'll do it. So I had to cancel everything that I was doing in Europe. They flew me from Milano to Paris. From Paris, I took the Concorde, which doesn't exist anymore, to New York. And then from New York, I took a plane to Puerto Rico where we shot it.
Yeah.
I was there for like 4 days shooting it. I could have been there longer, but then I had to leave for another job back in Europe. I wish I could have stayed, but it was the most amazing job. First of all, Mariah was amazing. Her crew, everyone she surrounded herself with was so pleasant, and it's just in Puerto Rico. And when I first got there, I remember they told me, it's like, listen, just go. They gave me a card and they said, just, you know, make yourself comfortable because we know you just flew in from Europe. Get some sun, hang out by the beach. We're going to shoot tomorrow. So I had this. So I got myself set up by the pool. I ordered a drink. I just flown all this way. And I shit you not, this is the way it happened. I pick up my drink and I take a sip of my drink. I put my drink down and I look up and there's Miss Puerto Rico beauty pageant surrounding the pool practicing something. They were practicing a pageant, I guess it was coming up. And I remember I was 23. Can you imagine sitting there by the pool watching these beautiful Puerto Rican girls thinking like, this is the life, man. I scored.
Melissa, is that player you had heard about? I'm just saying. I don't know.
No, come on.
The reputation comes from somewhere.
We've all been 23 before. Come on.
No, that's true. If I was 23 and Mr. Puerto Rico was practicing at the pool, I would have been like, okay.
Right. And then that job, the Mariah Carey video, led to One Life to Live, because that's how I got One Life to Live. One of the producers in the video, and then I got discovered.
And because you brought up Honey, I also have to insert that.
Oh, yeah, that story.
Meanwhile, I was like 13 when Honey came out, like 13 or 14, and I was obsessed with the hot guy at the end of the video.
I wish I would have known that early on.
This is back in like MTV days, right? So like sometimes they would cut the end of the video short, right? To go to
TRL.
So I remember like, you know, you'd run home from school and you'd like go put MTV on to watch videos. And I would get so mad when they would cut Honey short because the hot guy at the end of the video. And I freaked out. And then when I met David, it wasn't like Google wasn't out yet. So like I couldn't Google him. So I had no idea who his past and that he had been in this video. And then, yeah.
So when your kids are older and they ask you, Mommy, when was the first time you saw Dad? You were like, at the end of the Honey video.
Yeah, literally. He's carrying Mariah Carey and Frelke on a beach, and he looked
cool. But it goes with what you're saying, that, you know, about, like, being at the right place in the right time and luck, because that, I mean, at the time, you probably didn't realize it or didn't know that that would end up becoming probably her most iconic video, because that is by far her most famous video, and it was, you know, the change, the first video that was, like, the major change in her career, so, so that's, like, I mean, I'm sure that within the Mariah Carey, like, Lamb family, as they call it, and, like, fans, like, you know, everybody knows who you are. It's like, oh, it's the guy from the Honey video. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
I've been very lucky, man. I've been very lucky. Yeah.
Well, I know you guys got to go, because I know, like I mentioned earlier, you guys are parents. You got to go take care of the little youngins. But I just, again, I want to, you know, date la gracia, like, quite frankly, It's one of those things where we always talk about our wish list. And I will say that, you know, you guys have always been on the wish list of like, you know, well, maybe one day we'll get them on the show. Maybe one day we'll get them on the show. And so, you know, things manifest when you put it out into the universe. So, you know, thank you for stopping by our little podcast. We really do appreciate
And congratulations to you guys. You know, it's there's a certain like Cuban thing. That I remember when I was flying around Europe, I would run into Cubans from Cuba at like a restaurant. I could hear them a mile away. And it was the coolest thing to come up to them and say, "Soy cubano. Hey, que bola, what?" You'd hang out. Like, that's the coolest thing. And the same thing in this country, even though we've been here forever, this is my country, you know? But it always, when you hear about Cubans doing well or when you meet a Cuban, It's a cool thing. So congratulations to you guys.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
A lot of Cuban pride.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. And listen, next time you're in Miami, if we don't meet up at Besaya for a cabecito, I'm just saying, you know, then we may not have, we may not start our X-Men podcast, David. That's all I'm saying, if we don't have the café, okay?
Cafecito y don't forget una caja de pastelito and pan cubano.
Croquetas.
That's my thing. When I go down to Miami, I go to the bake. I don't do it anymore because now I usually go down to the Keys now. But when I used to go down to Miami all the time, one of the first things I would do. I go to the bakery, fill up a box with pastries, cuatro libra de pan, and one of them would go down by the time I got to the house.
I was going to say, wait.
He's talking shit. I don't know what he
means.
Well,
he still does that. Well,
you don't.
I was
going to
say,
you figure it out.
Find a way to do it. And I'm going to say this very clearly. No joda. On the way to Los Cayos, I Ricky, I Pinecrest, I de todo. O sea, I know you're stopping.
No, no.
Either, okay?
You know where to stop. You know where to stop. Or you go for a drive.
Well, I think it was last year I found out they had a Cuban bakery down there now, too. So
yeah, it's over. Pinecrest is on the way. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you, guys.
And we're back.
They were so fun.
They were great.
They were
really good. You know, in retrospect,
she couldn't stop giggling.
Yeah,
like the whole time.
And,
like,
you know, in retrospect, specifically about David, is that, you know, David was like a big time fashion model for all these fashion houses, and we always have this perception of models that they take themselves so seriously, and they're like, oh, you know.
Like, oh, I'm a model.
I'm a model. Yeah. And he couldn't have been more like, whatever.
I mean,
like,
he eats Bunkuano.
Yeah. But you know what I did love about them as a couple is that, you know, they've both been very successful. They've had, again, very high-end jobs and
very recognizable.
Roles, right. And they seemed so like, hey, you want to go?
If they had told me that they live in Kendall, I'd believe it.
They seem so like down to earth and so just like
average people.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, and you know, you guys are like have really iconic things to your name.
Yeah. So I freaking love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She's great. I'm a huge Andy Samberg fan.
Yeah. But everybody on that show is just like on all cylinders.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, the interview couldn't end without me asking him about Mariah Carey.
As you just heard, it didn't end without you asking about Mariah.
And I wanted to be very respectful about it because, you know, like, I'm sure that he probably at one time got a lot of.
Right.
So I don't want to be like that person to be like, oh my God, give me the scoop, you know? Right.
No, and what if he didn't have a good experience for whatever reason? Right. Or, you know.
But it's like, man, I'm 1 degree now from Mariah Carey.
You are. You are. We'll work on that.
And in the Mariah Carey universe of videos, Honey is her most iconic video. And, you know, and he's probably her most, like, iconic and well-known. Yeah, co-star, yeah. So that was a fun one. So.
I mean, when I think of the most iconic Mariah co-stars, it's him and the marimba from Glitter.
La marimba from Glitter. Hey, listen, Glitter had its comeback.
Yes, true. Although Glitter, you know, it's either the marimba or the silver streak. Those are the most iconic co-star
that had their moment that didn't have their moment.
That didn't have their moment.
So anyway, bueno, all this made me thirsty.
Are you thirsty? Do you want to go first? Do you want
I'll
me to go
first.
Okay.
So my last soda goes this week to Naomi Osaka.
From the French Open?
Yes. So for those of you who don't know Naomi Osaka, you should. She is one of
Know who she was till this week.
Really?
I don't follow tennis.
But she's one of the highest paid athletes in the world, and she's like a total badass.
How many times have you heard me talk about sports?
Okay. Anyway, so she, for those of you who don't know, she is a tennis player, but she is very successful. She won several championships. She's one of the highest paid athletes in the world. Her idol was Serena Williams growing up, and they've actually had matches against each other. And she's very young. I forget how old she is, but she's very young. And she's 23. But basically they were in the French Open this week. And I believe she had made it into the finals. And she asked that she did not want to do the press conference after the match. And they were like, no, you have to. One thing led to another. Right. And she quit.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been people, of course, because there's people who have opinions about
everything. Because it's 2021.
Who are like, oh, you know, she's entitled. And this
ungrateful.
You know, and ungrateful and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, listen, she is a tennis player. She's not a media person. And if her because he apparently the thing with
she
with,
suffers from like anxiety or something.
Yes,
right?
The thing about the press conferences is specifically for tennis after an open is that it's not about like asking questions like, oh, how did you feel going in today, and
how'd you prepare or whatever.
It was they ask you questions about your plays. Oh, you did this and this and this, like why did you do that?
Okay.
So they are online, like
live TV.
Like, in real time, you have to go back and dissect your match, which
you weren't
exhausted
even thinking. Yeah.
Mentally and physically. Right. And she said that for mental health reasons, for her own health, she did not feel comfortable doing that. And they didn't respect her wishes, and she walked out. She left. She left the tournament. Yeah. And, you know, it goes back to one of those things that, and we've talked about it here on for different subjects. When somebody's telling you something,
believe them.
You need to believe them and shut up and listen. If the girl is telling you that she does not want to do the press conferences because it makes her feel uncomfortable,
it gives her anxiety, mental health,
then freaking listen to her and don't make her do the press conference. It's like, don't worry, boo. Most people are tuning in to watch the match.
Yeah. Nobody's really tuning in for the post.
For the post soundbite,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, I think Serena Williams had kind of like the best answer. You know, they asked her, you know, because of this, they asked her, so how do you feel about this? And she's like, oh, you know, I totally support her decision. Right. You know, if she feels bad about it, you know, I feel bad for her that she feels bad about it. Right. But the way that I handle it is that I know that nobody in that room can play like me or do the serves that I do or the plays that I do. So because I am better than them and they can't even touch me, I don't let them get to me. And I was like, oh, yeah. That's a mic drop moment. You gotta give her credit.
That's a self-confidence moment right there.
I mean, that's a healthy dose of self-confidence. Yeah, I mean, she is,
as our friend would say,
she is the best. But that's something that only she could say.
Like, right.
She's like the best. But it's like, yeah, you know, good for her. Good for her.
Putting herself first.
That she put herself first and her mental health first.
Yeah, absolutely.
And was like, fuck this. Like,
yeah.
Like, screw you, French Open. So, my soda goes off to her. Soda goes to her.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I mean, mental health, only you know your own mental health. And only you can be your own advocate.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to do it, who is?
And only you can stop forest fires.
It's true. You and Smokey the Bear. So, my last soda is actually for something that's a little somber. So, we're in Pride Month. And I'm actually going to try to give a last soda every week to something Pride related. And the first one that I'm giving it to is an Instagram page that I actually think everybody should follow or at least take a look at. It's called the AIDS Memorial. Mm-hmm. And what it is, it's, you know, as we sit here and talk about Pride and you have to know your history and what has come before and, you know, how far we've come and still so far to go and all that. You know, there is an entire generation of gay men who are just gone. Mm-hmm. You know, they never had the chance to see the progress. They never had the chance to grow old. And so this profile, what it is people post, I guess they share it to whoever the gatekeepers of the profile, and they provide them with, like, I mean, I'm showing you like very lengthy stories
about a person,
and they'll provide like a picture or two and things like that. And, you know, each post ends with the hashtag "What is remembered lives."
Oh, that is true.
And that so I, you know, I follow this page because it's a good reminder of, you know, as much work as we have to do and all of this and that, you know what? There's an entire generation of people who are not here to see it.
Yeah.
And we have to recognize the advances that have been made and but never forget.
Yeah.
Whose shoulders you stood on.
And I think that one of the biggest issues with what you're saying of like this whole like generation, I don't know if generation is the right word, but this whole group of people that kind of vanished, is that these were people that when they died, and let's kind of say between the 1980s,
early 90s,
mm-hmm. that they died and they were sort of seen as pariahs.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, oh my gosh, it's not, they weren't met with the compassion that we eventually.
Right.
Came around with, right. And were like, oh my gosh, you're dying of HIV or AIDS. Because even by the time Pedro Zamora came around, which was 94, 95, I feel there had been advance. Because I remember once
Elizabeth Taylor got involved, attitudes started changing.
But I remember when Pedro Zamora died,
there was a
big, you know, outcry for him and compassion for him.
But it's what you were saying earlier.
You got to know him. And it was also probably like 10, 12 years into it.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And we've come a long way since he died in 95. But even in 95, I think it was leaps and bounds.
From where we were in 89. From where we were
in 84, 85.
Right.
Because like these men specifically that were dying in the 80s, they were seen as like less than.
Yeah. No, you were sent off somewhere to die.
And you know, and not to like beat a dead horse and not to like, you know, bring up stuff from the past, but we are. you know, a lot of people love Ronald Reagan. You know, Ronald Reagan. Yeah.
He
accomplished all these things. He has all these merits. You know, the wall came down, all that stuff. But one of the things that the Reagan administration has really, their stock has really gone down.
They screwed the pooch.
Is that the Reagan administration, the first slew of people that died from AIDS were in 1981. Mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan did not publicly say anything about AIDS until 1987.
Yeah.
6 years later, like, what the hell were, like, you right. doing? And I understand that at the beginning, nobody knew what it was. And they couldn't figure it out. And, you know, I understand all that. So maybe he wasn't going to, like, do a knee-jerk reaction and come out.
Right.
But it's like, okay, I could understand maybe a couple of months or even a year. But, like, over six years, you know, that you just stood there. Can you imagine all the people that maybe either could have been saved or their quality of life could at least at the end improved. Could have been improved? Yeah. Because, like, these people are being left to die like they were dogs because nobody wanted to treat them. Nobody wanted to deal with them.
You want to talk about a quarantine.
Yeah. So, again, it's all those things that you have to look back and you have to see things.
So, you know what?
Give me
all of the pride shit at Target.
Yes.
Because we've come a long way, baby. Okay? So
I like that you said Target. Like,
because the little display is really cute. Like, I went by the other day. You can even see it from the door of the little Target in Coral Gables.
The little Target?
Yeah.
Oh, is that little one? Well,
that used, all it, one it used to be an Office Depot.
That is a little Target.
It's a little Target. It's a mini Target. But I love my mini Target.
Does the mini Target have everything Target has, but just in less quantities? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It does. It even has a Starbucks.
Okay. So it's just less quantities.
Yes.
It's not like...
Right.
Okay. We don't have sports stuff.
Right. But they'll have like a can of tennis balls.
Right. Not five different brands.
Right.
The little Target.
Like, oh, yeah, you're a swim boy all
is
the time.
It still called Target or is it called like Petite Target?
Petit Target? No. No, it's still Target. But yes, so the AIDS Memorial.
Oh, IG page. I have to tell you something. Our learn segment on this show, on this episode.
There's a lot to learn.
I'm glad Melissa and David kind of, you know,
livened it up a little bit. Yeah.
Because
there
was a lot to learn. But hey, that's why you roll with us here at Pero.
That's why you come back week after week,
you
baby.
You listen, laugh, and learn. Sometimes we laugh. Sometimes we learn. And sometimes we drink coffee. You drink coffee.
I drink coffee and you watch me.
Yes. I watch you drink coffee. Yes. So with that said, everybody, we hope you listened, laughed, and learned. Remember to grab your pastelito, your croqueta, and your cafecito. And thank you so much for joining us. Have a great, great weekend, everybody.
Yes, enjoy.
And that was episode 159. Oh, wow.
Getting close to 200. Pero Let Me Tell You is co-hosted by Darian Borges and Ismael Llano, produced by Ismael Llano, and our theme, Pero Let Me Tell You Freestyle, is composed by Michelangelo Lomlaplex, the official gay guy. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.